Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you so much for joining us. Our show today is all about how to improve your sleep. According to the Centers for Disease Control, insufficient sleep is a public health epidemic. Without enough sleep, our ability to concentrate goes down. Our stress levels go way up. And let's not forget that a lack of sleep can increase our risk of a car accident. Obviously, poor sleep habits can take its toll. Today, we see the use of sleep drugs going up and up, and the pharmaceutical industry is making a fortune on this health problem. But is medication really the solution? Today, we'll take a closer look at the biggest problems affecting our health, including what we can do about naturally improving our sleep and overall well-being. And as usual, we have an expert to talk to us about sleep. But before we get there, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's LivonLabs.com. And now, I'd like to introduce you to our special guest, Dan Pardee. Dan, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me on, Jonathan. It's great to be here.
Dan, I think for those who may not be familiar with your work, why don't we first talk about why you got so interested in sleep issues?
Yeah, sure. Well, I got into the field of sleep somewhat randomly. I took a job working at a pharmaceutical company called Orphan Medical. And it was a really interesting company because they were working to develop medications for rare disorders. So usually pharmaceutical companies do not, if there's a disease, if the population that has a disease is less than 200,000 people, then there's just not the financial benefit for a big pharmaceutical company to develop something. Orphan Medical said, hey, you know, there are people that have really serious needs, so we're going to work with these small populations. And I was hired by that company. Our company was working with a drug for narcolepsy, which is a rare disorder. And that's how I got involved with sleep. And the more that I learned about narcolepsy and, you know, and the medication, I just became fascinated with the whole thing. So as somebody who knew nothing, I spent the next 10 years going to the conferences and reading papers every single day. And then I started to do my own research in the subject later on. And it's just one of those topics where the more you learn, the more interesting it becomes.
I know you're really diving deep into this topic. Anybody listening to this podcast, Dan, they would understand that health is really on a decline. Generally speaking, so many people are suffering with health issues. What do you think is the biggest problem going on here? What would you say?
So I do two things. I'm a sleep researcher currently, and I also have a health technology company called Dan's Plan. And the thesis that company is basically working towards is that the modern world is not providing the right type of stimulation. We have the technology that can make us watch very bright televisions at night to have us eat foods that are foreign to our body, to sit all day. So what's very normal in our modern world is very foreign for our body. And the result ends up being chronic disease, poor performance, not feeling good all the time. And that is, when you look around us, that just seems to be the normal situation. But the nice thing about this is that this is, I think, an addressable problem if we understand, you know, what are the factors that really matter and how can we do, you know, what we should actually do to try to address them. But most of the things that I try to do with our company is to try to help people live a more natural existence, but in the context of modern realities, like having a job where you have to sit at your desk. So that's what I think is kind of the main driver, and that's supported by information by the CDC. It suggests that 80% of most chronic disease is from lifestyle. And so, that puts the power back in our hands, at least for some of these things, where we can say, okay, I can now take control of this, and I can maintain an effective health pattern or daily pattern of living that's going to keep me well.
Well, I mean, this is an important point. You were almost reading my mind at the end. I wanted to ask you, based on your research, all of your intelligence, and your looking into this topic, would you say that it is impossible or definitely possible these days with technology the way it is, the way our lifestyles have changed, right, Dan? I mean, obviously, a lot of people might even perceive it as mostly a good thing, right? That we don't have to be outside and working so physically hard anymore. Technology enables us to use machinery so that we don't have to exert as much effort to do things. On one hand, it seems nice, but in this world, like you just said, there are so many health problems that are associated with being more sedentary, more indoors. So, you know, what's your take on all this? Can we really enjoy that amazing health with all of this modern technology?
You know, it's such a good question because technology can shape how we live so quickly. You know, some new technology product, like let's say, for example, the iPad, it's introduced into the world, and within a few years, hundreds of millions of people are using, you know, that sort of product. And, you know, for example, the iPad enables you to do computing in, let's say, in bed, right? You can now take your computer into bed, and you can now get bright light coming into your eyes before bedtime. I can talk a little bit about that later when we talk specifically about sleep. But these sorts of things basically provide kind of a strange environment for our body. So our body reacts normally, and I'll just actually give you more detail since we're talking about it now. But your brain is taking in light through the eyes, and it is so when it's taking in light, it thinks that it's daytime. And so if you're getting a lot of bright light coming into your eye from, again, high definition televisions or e-readers, the brain will not produce normal hormones in response to darkness to let it know, hey, it's nighttime. And so that can do a lot of things, but in the context of sleep, it can mask the feeling of sleepiness that might be there. It can make you feel extra alert. So you're like, oh, I don't really feel like going to bed because I'm not tired yet. And there's actually now something called iPad insomnia, where you say, oh, I'm just going to read my iPad until I'm sleepy. But the fact that you're actually engaging it is masking the sleep that the sleepiness that might be there. So if you weren't doing that, you were laying in bed in a dark room, you'd be sleeping. And so it's this weird sort of situation. That's just one example. And as you mentioned, 90% of time that we spend is indoors now in the United States, where 200 years ago, over 90% of people were working in agrarian business, so farming, outside, agriculture. And so that's a very, very rapid shift. But at the same time, you know, some of these things are not going to be modifiable. Like, I don't think it's a realistic solution to say, okay, give up all of that and, you know, move to the mountains and just live outside. Now, some people will find that compelling and do that, but it's not a practical solution for many people. But I also think that new technologies actually can be a part of the solution. There's a whole new field called quantified self, where you can track and measure aspects of how you're actually living. And then you can set goals like, okay, I want to get outside for 20, 30 minutes per day. I want to walk this many steps. I want to make sure I get this much time in bed. And all of that can now counteract these other forces that are, you know, of the modern lifestyle that then can hopefully help us maintain a pattern that, again, is more natural. So while I absolutely think that technology is a big part of what's driving poor health today, I think it can be a part of the solution, not the entire solution, but part of it, if we engage with it in the right way.
Well, I think what you said towards the end, Dan, is extremely important, and I don't want to gloss over it for another couple minutes, because what I'm referring to is this idea of, you know, look, we didn't have cell phones before. We didn't have the iPad. We didn't have certain technologies. And then a few years later, boom, like you say, millions and millions of people have it and literally almost say, if not quite literally, how could I have lived without this technology? But at the same time, Dan, a lot of people are completely unaware of how it has completely changed their lifestyle, and I mean in a negative way. So I think that if you're talking about things that we can do, like even perhaps just listening to this podcast, and again, I'm not trying to just pat myself on the back here, but I think we need more feedback, you know? We need good people around us. You know, you and I hanging out with each other talking about this makes us more aware of these things, you know, so that we can go and make those changes. I think this kind of stuff is very important, and a lot of people are missing it, which leads me to my next question, Dan. We've got all this information out there, right? If you go to government health agencies, they would say, generally speaking, they would say, that's not our area of expertise. We'll leave it to the private sector. You know, they can teach you how to eat better so you can prevent disease. That's not really our thing at all. The reality is there is a lot of information out there to help us live healthier lives. So my question to you is, why are so many people still struggling then? What would you say?
I'll tell you a story that I think is extremely relevant to that question. So in 2002, this is prior to me doing sleep research, I was doing cancer research. I was working at a place called the Preventative Medicine Research Institute, and we were looking at how lifestyle modifies the progression of prostate cancer. And at the same time, my father came down with a cancer diagnosis. It was a different type of cancer, but, you know, still, like anybody would do, I tried my hardest to help him and say, "Hey, Dad, these are the things that you can do to improve your outcome." And we would sit down, and I would share all this information with him, and he would listen really proudly to me because he could see how passionate I was and how much I was studied on the subject, but he didn't change anything. So we would sit down again, and I would go through the whole thing, and I'd tell him I was frustrated, and I would give him more information. And we repeated that cycle over and over again. And when he passed away, I really felt like I had failed him. And I thought about it, and I said, okay, you know, what can I do differently? And if I'm really committed to health and just helping to facilitate health in others, then how do you really affect behavior? And information is undoubtedly extremely important, operating with the right ideas in mind, and even getting exposure to them. But the behavior modification doesn't end there. And so, you know, there is a lot of good information out there. There's a lot of not so good information out there. And finding the right stuff and then knowing, having confidence in it is, you know, those are kind of two different challenges. But there is really good information out there. And that's a good thing about technology now is that, you know, there are great podcasts. There's great books. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. You know, it makes it easier to find good information, but it also kind of makes it easier for bad information to be disseminated too.
Dan, I'll share just a very quick story with you as well. I have no problem. My life is pretty much an open book on the internet. But, you know, my master's degree studies are in exercise physiology, and I've helped people with athletic training, and I was performing at a very high level when I was in my 20s, athletically speaking, and of course through high school as well. All of that I understand. I know the value, probably more than the average person, about the benefits of exercise. And all the information is there. It's inside of me, and I'm surrounded by it, by all the fancy books I have. I do shows like this and on and on and on. But here's the reality. For many years, I've been surrounded by technology, being on the internet, doing these shows, the stresses, the good stresses, but they are stresses of running this business and this company and all the writers we have and all of this, that my exercise over the last many years had gone way down. But there was something inside of me that I absolutely loved, and it was the game of racquetball. So racquetball would pull me back into the fitness clubs, which I'm happy to say for me personally has changed my life. I'm back connecting with a game that I love. Exercising again, oh boy, all of that's good for me. And now the floodgates are open, if you will, the realizations of how important again, I realize again how important exercise is by getting back involved. So having shared that story with you, I'd really like you to spend just a couple minutes before we take our break about your behavior model. We're going to definitely get into some of the things that will help people improve their sleep and the quality of their life. But please talk about your behavior model, how you've developed it, and why you did it.
Yeah, sure. So this was in response to, you know, there was a period of sadness after my father passed away, and I took a very sincere interest in trying to understand what is it that actually shapes what we do? What are all the different sorts of factors, social, emotional, cognitive, environmental? So I did a very deep dive into a lot of different behavior models. And a behavior model is something that will describe, predict, or try to explain why is it that we do something, or how do we actually change, you know, a behavior from a, you know, perhaps a, you know, an existing behavior set that has been, you know, lasting for a period of time? How do you change that? And so what I created was something called the loop model to sustain health behaviors. And the executive summary, or the high level description of it, is very simple. And it's, why do you do something? How do you do it? Or why should you do something? How do you do it? Are you doing it? And is it working? All right. So the first part is, well, the why should you do something? It's the persuasive argument. Hey, this matters, and this is what all the benefits that you get for it, right? You kind of walk through the analysis of why this is good. But then you have to really translate that into, okay, over the course of a 24-hour period of one day, or a 168-hour period of one week, what is that idea of, like, why this, hey, this is good, now I believe it, but what does it look like in terms of actionable steps? What are the things that I do? And then from there, it's, am I doing it? And this is kind of where the new technology component comes into play, which I was mentioning earlier, the quantified self. And the thing that's always really difficult for humans to grasp is that it's easy to think you're doing something, but actually not be. And it's basically to have that kind of a misperception about what you think you're doing and what you're actually doing. And so to be able to get some objective feedback on something that you intend to do can be very, very powerful. And one of the most famous psychologists, Antonio Bandura, who was at Stanford in the mid-60s, and he studied feedback loops. And he showed that if you can give somebody, help them set a clear goal, and you can give them objective feedback on how they're doing as they work towards that goal, they're much more likely to actually achieve it. And so, and he's actually the fourth cited psychologist of the 20th century. He's a very, very famous guy. And so now I think with, you know, these step counters like Fitbits, et cetera, that you can wear on your wrist, and you can say, hey, I want to walk 10,000 steps a day, because that is a valid measure that shows, you know, many different health benefits. And I know how to do it. And now I know if I'm doing it or not, because I get this day by day feedback. I think that the usual pattern is to say, I'm going to give you all this information, and then I'm going to set you free into the world. And just by knowing the information is enough. But I'll give you one last anecdote here, is that I was educating on sleep for the last couple of years. And people would ask me, hey, Dan, you know, how much sleep do you get? I get 8 hours a night. And I started to measure my own sleep after I got one of these sleep trackers, and I was getting actually 7. So I was, my own idea of how much I was getting versus what I really was, and I measured over a 3-month period, it was different. And so for me, it wasn't about then saying, hey, you know, let me give you more information to make it, you know, make more of an impression that sleep matters, because I already knew that. It was actually just having kind of, you know, really good feedback to say, this is what you're really doing. And then I was able to modify what I actually, you know, how I, you know, my going to bed practice, et cetera. And it made all the difference in the world. And so just knowing good information is not enough, but it's also having that engagement strategy. How do you engage with these health ideas on a regular basis and say, yes, okay, I am living according to my own ideals and my goals? So that is the kind of the essence of the behavior model. And everything I do with my company is aiming to try to kind of filter it into this, you know, these channels, giving good information, giving good programming, giving you good feedback. And I think it's, you know, I think that the more we live in this manner that is disconnected from origin human environment, like, you know, by living, working at a desk job, for example, the more we do need sorts of technologies that kind of help us, that support us, that make it easier to stay engaged with this idea of, hey, I want to be healthy. You know, are you doing it today?
Yeah, I definitely want to get into this much more. We're going to get into some really great tips now about how to improve your sleep and really, bottom line, change your behavior so that you can really reap the rewards. That's what this is all about. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Dan, I really like everything you're talking about, because this idea of feedback really tells people more honestly what's going on. And I have found in my own experience as well, just to back up everything that you've been saying in your research, I have experienced this in almost 30 years in the health and fitness industry, that just somehow finding a bit of information to be able to give that feedback to that person to, bottom line, have them realize what's really going on versus what they think is going on is really powerful. It's very motivational. It creates change in them that is much more positive. And what I'm referring to is, athletically speaking, this has happened time and again, what you were talking about, Dan. This idea of telling runners, for example, you know, how many miles do you run a week and how fast do you run? And, you know, when you see those athletes that are trying to improve their running time, for example, and they're not really super focused on, and here's the kicker, really simple, easy things, but they're just not doing it, that their training is so sloppy because they don't wear a watch when they're supposed to, when they don't actually drive their car to figure out a distance from point A to point B, how many miles they've actually gone, that they're under some perception that they've done more than they actually have. And it's amazing. Most people absolutely think so much more in a grandiose way, or maybe that's not the best word, the best way that they are actually doing something, when in reality, they're really not there at all. So I'd really love for you to get into these tips, these things that, and you were referring to some of them earlier, but, you know, getting a good night's sleep is so important. So many people are deprived. Talk about it. How can we improve a good night's sleep and make it even better for ourselves?
Yeah, sure. And before I get there, I'll just, as you were talking, it just, example, what you just described, I just wrote and published a blog on my 2014 health practice report. So I did an analysis of, hey, what did my year look like? How do you know? What did I learn? What are some insights from my sleep practice and my physical activity practice? And so I'll send that to you in case you want to include it in the show notes. But I think it's a perfect representation of the conversation we just had.
Oh, absolutely. And let me just interrupt for just a moment and let everyone know that we will not only put that onto the page. So again, if you've downloaded this podcast and you're listening to it outside your home, hey, that's fine. But when you get a chance, go to naturalhealth365.com. Just click on the podcast link. You will find Dan's show right there about improving sleep. And the bottom line is, we'll have what you just mentioned, Dan, right there on the podcast page. And we'll also have a link to your website, Dan's Plan. That's DANSPLAN.com. And Dan, maybe we'll have time at the end. There's a lot of great information on that website. You can tell people about it, but please go there when you do have some time. So sorry to interrupt, Dan. Tell us how to improve the quality of the sleep that we get at night.
So what I'm going to kind of shoehorn into that, and I'll mention something about Dan's Plan, and I'll focus on sleep. So with Dan's Plan, what we try to do is help everybody live as an intelligent eater, an enduring mover, and a restorative sleeper. So those are aspirational concepts. And let me focus on what the restorative sleeper is. So the restorative sleeper wakes refreshed and feels alert all day. So, okay, yeah, I want that. How do you do that? Well, what are the determinants of good sleep? What are the things that determine whether or not you get good quality sleep, where sleep works for you, where you feel really refreshed? And the things that matter for sleep are timing, intensity, and duration. Now, two of those are directly actionable. Like you can change your behavior to affect them. And that is in-bed duration. So how much time are you spending in bed? Not the only thing that matters, but you're not going to get 8 hours of sleep if you're in bed for six, right? So you got to give yourself adequate time to get the sleep that your body needs. The other one is timing. Now, timing is where sleep is occurring within a 24-hour period. So let's say you usually go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8 a.m. But one night you decide to go to bed at 4 a.m. and wake up at noon. Now, even though you got 8 hours of sleep, same amount of time, because that timing of the sleep was shifted to a period that is unfamiliar to your body for normal sleep, it would not be as restorative. You would not feel that you got the same amount of rest. And that has to do with the body becomes programmed for doing a certain type of behavior at a certain period of time. It's called your circadian rhythms. And circadian rhythms are these repeatable 24-hour processes that affect things like digestion and behavior and when you feel awake and when you feel asleep. In fact, your sleep and your sleep and wakefulness are a circadian rhythm. And the major controller of your circadian rhythms is light entering into your eye. Now, we evolved on a planet with a persistent 24-hour light and dark cycle, and our bodies are, immaculately attuned to these signals of our environment. And so how does that work? Well, light enters into the eye, and there are special cells called intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells that are in the back of the eye, and they can take take photons of light and turn it into a nerve signal. And that nerve signal, we know this when we have, because we have rods and cones in the retina, and they can turn light into images by sending that image to a certain part of the brain. Well, these other groups of cells will go back to a part of the brain called the master clock. And the master clock, its main job is to say, okay, what time of day is it? And so there's two levels of synchronization. There's the master clock of your brain synchronizing with your environment, the outdoor environment. And then there is another level of synchronization, which is you have clocks in all of your tissues and cells throughout your body, and they are synchronizing with the master clock, right? And so what you really want to do is think of it almost like a symphony, right? There's a bunch of different instruments, and you want to get them playing in the same rhythm, right? You want to get concordance between how they're all working. In our modern environment, an analogy is that we're giving, because of the way that we're providing signals, too little indoor light during the day. Although it's hard to really detect, the intensity of light indoors compared to outdoors at noon, let's say, is orders of magnitude less intense. And so we're not getting a very robust daytime signal. And then in the evening, we're getting too much light, even though it's dark outside. And that tells the brain, hey, it's still light out. And so the combination of effects leads to this discordance with these rhythms. And so not only does a restorative sleeper get adequate time in bed and tries to sleep in a consistent time window, but you also maintain smart light rhythms day, evening, and night, which means you want to get at least a half an hour of sunshine outside per day if you can. There's some things that you can do if you're, at times of year it's really cold or it's just not an inhospitable environment. And then we could talk about those in a minute. And then in the evening, you want to then dim your environmental lights. All we're really trying to do is mimic the natural environment, right? So you have all the lights on it, indoors during the day, in your office, wherever. Try to make it a really intense lighting situation. And then in the evening, dim those lights. So turn off all the lights that you're not using. And then the other thing that actually matters is the spectrum of light. So try to make the light kind of similar to what a fire would emit. So incandescent, amber-toned, really try to remove the blue light from your environment. And because the blue light is actually a really strong signal that, hey, it's daytime. And it's going to suppress melatonin production, and it's going to cause your rhythms to shift in a manner that makes it easier to stay up late at night, night after night, and harder to wake up in the morning and then feel alert during the day. So those are that's the way that I think about it. There's so many interesting things about sleep. We could talk for 5 hours about all the way that it affects our physiology and our behavior. But at the end of the day, all that stuff, it kind of comes down to, are you getting enough time in bed? Are you sleeping in a consistent phase? And are you maintaining smart light rhythms day, evening, and night? And if you are, you're getting all of the benefits of what a sleep practice can, or at least you're doing behaviorally, you're doing most of what you can do to kind of cultivate a healthy sleep practice.
Dan, just from my gut, I've never done a research project like you're capable of doing and crunching numbers like, say, Dr. Stephanie Seneff has done and looking at glyphosate and all the problems that chemical, that herbicide from Monsanto is causing people by spraying it all over the crops. She's looking at numbers. You're looking at numbers. But boy, does my gut tell me that over the years, when I listen to the way you were speaking just now, and I think about the highest stressed out individuals that there are, the children who I've worked with in sports, who are obviously trying to achieve a very high level of performance, but I'm asking them these days, hey, what are you doing? 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, the mobile devices, it's all up in their face. They're staying up till 11, 12, 1, sometimes 2 in the morning, sleep deprived with that light blasting in their head. They're totally whacked out during the day. I can tell that their training is off and they're really not getting a good quality fitness training session from me. Okay, that's number one. And then number two, all the personal training that I've done over the years and working with people and coaching them, just the average person that was super stressed out were the attorneys in particular. And I mean, I'm not trying to pick on them, but a lot of funny stories, Dan, that I'm sure you can relate to, where they would almost like pride themselves on listening to the 11 o'clock news on television in the bed and not be asleep. But then I see them the next day and they're super wired and they're always complaining about stress. So here it is. What do? Turn the lights down, like you say. I've got the Himalayan, you know, these sea salt lamps I've got on that have a nice low reddish glow to them at night. It kind of just resets my clock. And at night, it just feels so good to be surrounded by that much dimmer, more relaxing atmosphere a good 2 hours before I go to sleep. I'm sure you would agree, Dan. This is a good idea, right?
It is. And, you know, it's funny, Jonathan, sometimes I don't ever talk about light unless I have an adequate amount of time to explain why it matters, because it almost sounds hokey. But if you think about it, it's not. You know, this is, like I said earlier, our bodies are very attuned to our environment around us. We almost think of ourselves as separate from our environment, but actually our health, the environment that it surrounds us, including the food, including even the physical activity pattern that we have to maintain and light, et cetera. These are things that are a part of our health, without a doubt. And that's because, you know, for example, sleep has a absolutely pervasive effect on our physiology. If you don't get the sleep that you need, there is examples of almost every part of the body breaking down. Right now, that wouldn't necessarily happen, you know, every part wouldn't happen to you, but chronic inadequate sleep leads to much higher incidence of cardiovascular disease and cancers and obesity. So my research is looking at how sleep loss influences eating behaviors and weight regulation. Fascinating subject. But I'm also looking at how inadequate sleep is influencing cognitive performance. So things like, you know, information processing, memory, mood, outlook, attention spans. And you mentioned earlier the kids that are staying up. This is just a perfect example of what we were talking about in the beginning, about how the real health issue is just this technology and really the way that the world is now. You know, a kid that is, let's say, 10, 11, 12, you know, they want to be social and interact with their friends. And it's very difficult for them. It's very compelling to want to just continue to engage with that. So they're not bad kids for wanting to do that, but it's these tools facilitate it. And kids that are of, you know, the pubescent age, they're still growing. So they still need 9-10 hours of time in bed just so their body can do, you know, develop appropriately. And what's happening is that these kids are not feeling sleepy. They're too stimulated late at night. And then they have to get up at 7:30 in the morning. So they stay up till midnight, 1-2, and they have to get up at 7:30. And this is a major driver of attention deficit. This is my research shows this. I do something called the psychomotor vigilance task, which is a reaction time test. And it doesn't take a lot of sleep loss for people to start reacting really, really slowly. It's not that you can't focus when you don't get enough sleep. You just can't focus for very long, right? You can focus for something for just a minute, and then your mind just jumps. It takes energy to really concentrate your efforts on one thing and stay there versus have your mind jump all over the place. So, you know, whether we're talking about physiological issues that lead to, you know, things like cancer or heart disease or metabolic issues, obesity, or we're talking about behavioral issues that can lead to things like accidents, poor performance, just completely substandard performance relative to what you're capable of. This is now the modern condition. And it's really sad to me because there are people that are out there that really care about good information and they care about their health. And I actually, you know, I sometimes think that the health dialogue is that people are lazy and stupid. They don't care about their health. And I don't believe that. I think that people do. The idea of self-preservation is strong within us, but we just have to have something that we can believe in and then understand a really clear path about how to do it. And so you said something earlier, it doesn't have to be complicated. And what I describe all of these things that we focus on is the mundane but meaningful. They're easy to overlook. Going to bed at the right time is not the most, you know, amazing. You're not going to post on Facebook the next day like, hey, guess what I did, friends? You know? But it matters so much. And so the nice thing, I think that when you create this very healthy daily pattern of living, that it serves you and you feel it and you benefit. Just like you were saying with your racquetball practice, when you got back into it, you're like, this just feels right. And so the nice thing is when you sleep really, really well and you're getting enough physical activity and you're eating the right foods, your body thanks you for it and you feel terrific. And that is reinforcing and self-perpetuating.
No, I mean, I agree with you. We could go on and on for hours. But first, I want to finally thank our sponsor one more time, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's LIVONLABS.com. Dan, usually our podcasts are a little shorter, but this is a really, really important topic, so I don't mind going on just another couple minutes as we finish off. Can you just talk a little bit more about your research on sleep and this idea of the feeding behavior? I mean, you kind of alluded to it, I think, before, you know, that if you don't sleep well, it actually can cause you problems with weight gain, things like this. So I think people should really pay attention to what you're about to say.
So I was shocked when I learned that 81 out of 89 studies that looks for a correlation between sleep loss and weight gain, there was a positive finding. So there was a meta-analysis that was performed that if you're getting inadequate sleep, so let's say somewhere between 20-30% less than what your body would like, which is actually what is common, right? Self-reported sleep times in the 1960s were about 8.5 hours. And now, from the National Sleep Foundation, we get about 6 hours, 6.5 hours per night on average as a society. And then we get a little bit more during the weekend, 7 hours and 20 minutes. This is a level, this decrement in sleep time is at a level that we see major impairments, right? We see the major impairments metabolically and cognitively, all of these things. So I was interested to look at these two areas together. And I won't go through the entire sequence of the history about how the first time association between sleep and weight was made, but the very quick kind of lineage is that first there were researchers noticed that when people didn't get enough sleep, there was disruption. They looked like they were a diabetic, even though they weren't. So if you measured their ability to regulate glucose after a night of poor sleep, they looked a lot more like a diabetic in how they regulated glucose. Then the research went into looking at how various hormones that are responsible for controlling energy, so things like leptin and ghrelin that affect hunger and energy expenditure, and there were some disturbances there. Then things got really interesting because fMRI, or functional magnetic resonance imaging, where you can look at the brain while it's thinking, showed that after sleep loss, if you have somebody sitting in this device where you're looking at the brain while it's making decisions after sleep loss, that people, even if they didn't, if there was no difference between their hunger levels between them and a group that got normal sleep, the areas of the brain that really are responsive to palatable hedonic foods like, you know, donuts or candy, et cetera, those things lit up like a Christmas tree, totally different than how the response that you would get if you got normal sleep. And so if you think about making a decision, there's something called the neurocompetitive model for decision making. Think about a donut, right? Let's say you really like ice cream or donuts, just something, insert some dessert that you know tastes great, but you also, you know, recognize is not great for you. Well, the desire to have that dessert happens before the analysis of it. I really love ice cream. Oh, but you know what? It's not good for me. It's not good for my weight. Right. So you can see how there's a little bit of that competition, the desire for it, but then there's the analysis. And those we'll call the economic preferences, those will shift. And so that ability for you to kind of put in that analysis and say, hey, you know, this is not so good for me, that almost goes functionally offline. It's much weaker after a night of poor sleep. But the areas that are responding to the desire of that, you know, the ice cream or the donut, those are really, really active. So the way that I translate this sort of information is that if you're chronically existing in a state of sleep deprivation, you're just much more likely to live in discordance with your own goals and ideals, right? You're much more likely to say yes to the candy bowl as you pass by, even though you don't want to, because you have kind of this imbalanced, you know, system in the brain that is happening in response to not getting enough sleep. And so my research just looked at an area that's related to that, and what I found is that when people don't get enough sleep, their reaction times become significantly slower, and that this once their reaction time is slow, it's a measure of alertness or vigilance, then people were much more likely to say yes to foods that they rate as low health. That's really interesting. It's really, really interesting. You're much more likely to say yes to the foods that you don't think are healthy when you don't get enough sleep or when you're tired. And so, you know, like I said at the beginning of this section, we're all getting, you know, as a society, not all of us, but as a population, the average sleep times are less. We know that obesity rates are rising at this, you know, very drastic rate, or have risen. There's some evidence that it's leveling off a little bit. Sleep loss was not a part of any equation for why we gain weight 10, 15 years ago. And now it's showing to be a really critical part. So that's, you know, I won't go into too much more detail there, but that gives you kind of a summary, a synopsis of, the, you know, why I'm interested in this, some of the research that supports like this connection, and what I think you can do about it. You can go back to the previous discussion that says, you know, maintain, focus on getting enough time in bed, adequate kind of sleep timing, and then maintain smart light rhythms day, evening, and night, and you will benefit from it in multiple ways.
Dan, I'm looking forward to having you come back again. There's so many areas to go into. We didn't even have time today. Perhaps you'll look in the future with your research about how wireless technology and microwave radiation, how that's actually physiologically affecting the human body. And I would love to have you come on and talk about that. We're going to be covering these topics about sleep issues and physical problems, how that's all related, wireless technology, all kinds of different topics we're going to be looking into throughout the year. But, you know, for now, Dan, you know, we got to stop right there. And I just wanted to thank you so much for spending some time with us today. The information was great.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on the show. I always feel really honored to be able to get the chance to talk about this stuff. I'm very passionate about it, and I know there's a great need out there. So thank you, and thank you to your listeners. And, you know, again, I'm happy to help, you know, people go over to Dan's Plan. They can check out some of my writing about it on the blog, et cetera. And hopefully that's another source for them to, you know, feel like they're getting, you know, good support in their own health practice, as I call it.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.